We're going to take a closer look at the state of the Massachusetts middle class and how they could affect the November election. And to help us do that, we're joined from NPR's New York Bureau by David Callahan. He's co-founder and senior fellow at Demos, a nonpartisan think tank that recently published a report entitled The State of the Massachusetts Middle Class. And David Callahan, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Great to be here.
And listeners, we want you to get involved in this conversation. Do you feel the Massachusetts middle class is in peril? We're going to hear a report that suggests there are big concerns. What issues matter most to middle class voters? And who in this race is best equipped to handle them? And do you think the concerns of the middle class are being reflected in the current political debate? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, David Callahan, let me start with your report, which came out a few months ago in September, I guess. It found that the Massachusetts middle class is probably doing better than folks in much of the rest of the country, but you found that it's still in jeopardy. How so?
Well, absolutely. This is a mixed picture. The Massachusetts middle class, you have more people in that state with a college degree, 43% of Massachusetts residents with a college degree. You have higher median earnings for college grads in Massachusetts than elsewhere in the country. And so in many ways, the Massachusetts middle class is doing good compared to other Americans in the middle class. On the other hand, all of the same problems and pressures that we see out there facing the middle class you also find in Massachusetts, with middle class families feeling strapped by the cost of college, strapped by the cost of childcare, strapped by the cost of home ownership, and, you know, struggling. And it's interesting because, you know, Elizabeth Warren famously made her mark with a book called The Two-Income Trap, which described the life of kind of college-educated middle-class families under financial pressure. And you can see a lot of that kind of dynamic here in Massachusetts.
Right, and what Elizabeth Warren was writing about in that two-income trap, this idea that families are now putting both husband and wife into the workforce. They're dealing with a much higher cost of housing, much higher cost for childcare. So this is particularly tough for younger members of the middle class, right?
Absolutely. You know, young people, they come out, they have that college degree, but they also have record levels of debt from getting that degree. And earnings for college graduates have stagnated in the past 20 years in Massachusetts. College graduates today aren't making any more money in real terms than they made in the 1980s in Massachusetts. And yet, all sorts of expenses have gone up, the cost of homes, the cost of childcare. And so it's the sense of running on a treadmill for a lot of families.
And of course, we're talking about trends that have been underway for a while. But how has the Great Recession hit the middle class in Massachusetts? I mean, one can only assume it's made things worse, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it has particularly been hard for young people who have been hit really hard. You know, they have that college debt, but they don't have the kinds of jobs they had previously or those opportunities. So they're really struggling. I mean, Massachusetts lost 150,000 jobs during the Great Recession. Many of those jobs were good jobs, and many aren't coming back. Mm. And a lot of people who have found new jobs are taking jobs making less money.
Steve Cozzella, I want to get back to you and about some of the particulars that this poll found about the middle class. But let me just ask David one more question about this study, because both these studies kind of converge, and we're going to see how in a moment. But David, here's my question. You did a lot in this study looking at the Massachusetts middle class and how the state has changed in its move away from a largely manufacturing economy to a much more highly educated and more service-based industry. Does that change what issues the middle class is concerned about?
Well, yeah, Massachusetts is sort of a case study of the change of our economy. In 1980, 30% of workers in the state were in manufacturing. Now it's under 10%. Meanwhile, the number of people who are in services or knowledge-based industries has gone way up. It's now the majority of workers in Massachusetts. You know, these are college-educated workers. They are people who I think have a different set of concerns than the working class manufacturing workers of the past. They They may be more interested in more liberal on some of the social issues than in the past.
Very interesting. And Steve Cozzella, I'm interested, what does this poll say about the candidates and their appeal to middle class voters? I mean, what's sort of the best way to talk about how that's quantified?
Well, we looked at it from two different angles. We looked at it both from the angle of which of the candidates is best equipped to represent and address the needs and concerns of the middle class when they're in the Senate. And the other way that we looked at it is more of a cosmetic way. In other words, who appears to be more middle class themselves, who
Right.
came from a middle class background. We found when looking at the first of those issues, when looking at who's best equipped to represent the needs and interests of the middle class in the Senate, it's kind of a toss-up. You know, the numbers are about the same, really, for the two of them.
It is about the same. And when you talk about that more cosmetic question, which may be less serious, but in a political season, we get involved in all kinds of silliness. Scott Brown is perceived as marginally more middle class than Elizabeth Warren, right?
Correct, by about a 10% difference, correct.
Yeah. And David Callahan, any sense about how significant the sort of perception about candidates are when it comes to these issues?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of this is going to change once we get into the advertising and people get to know the candidates better. For sure, Scott Brown has that kind of populist touch, the guy you want to have a beer with. You know, he seems very down to earth. But, you know, Elizabeth Warren is by no means the Harvard elitist that, you know, many people might imagine. I mean, she was born in Oklahoma. If you meet her, as I have, she comes across as very much of a kind of no-nonsense, practical woman. Who is talking a lot of common sense. And I find it ironic that the candidates at this point are perceived as equal on who will defend the middle class, since Elizabeth Warren has literally made her career in recent years in standing up for the middle class against strong financial interests and studying and understanding the new pressures, particularly that these college-educated, two-income families face. And there's a lot of those kinds of families in Massachusetts.
We're talking about, listeners, we're talking about to what extent are the concerns of middle-class voters being reflected in the current political debate? Are you hearing them expressed by the candidates, either here in Massachusetts or across the United States? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Twitter and Facebook at Radio Boston. Let's take a call from Rick, who's calling from Lowell. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a 30-something educated, liberal, civic-minded voting man from Lowell, Massachusetts, and I find it interesting, this is a great topic, that my friends, family, ilk, and individuals in my community that are about my age are in a great position right now, not just to hear what these politicians have to say, but to also shape what is part of the conversation, because we're idealistic, educated, and available because a good portion of us are unemployed.
Mm. Yeah. And what are you hearing out there, and what do you see in this race that resonates with this group of folks that you're talking about?
Well, it's hard to put your finger on it because a lot of it is just talking points that are rehashed by the, you know, media bully pulpits. But a lot of what's going on in our community is that we're getting more, from what I'm feeling, is that communities are becoming more insular and that we're talking more, you know, I'm hearing more of my friends who are talking about, you know, the city council meetings than they care to hear about what's going on, you know, with Newt Gingrich or Romney or Santorum or Obama, because it seems like such a distant thing, because all of our problems, we feel that there's a necessity to create a sustainable environment within our community, and it's becoming more and more of that, you know, porch talk and less about what you're hearing on the radio and what you're hearing on television.
Rick, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. David, let me ask you sort of the question that I put out there to listeners and that Rick, I think, was sort of getting at there. To what extent are the concerns of the middle class being reflected in the current political debate?
Well, I think that a lot of those concerns are being reflected. I mean, when we really get to this election, There's going to be a lot of discussion of that health insurance reform that was passed in 2010, which goes to one of the key concerns middle-class people have right now, which is the affordability of health care. That's one of those areas where they've been really creamed with escalating health care premiums, even, you know, way beyond the rate of inflation. We're going to hear a lot about this Wall Street Reform Act, and Elizabeth Warren is somebody who, of course, was the architect of this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. A lot of middle-class people have felt like their needs have been bypassed because the financial sector has too much power. And then there's, of course, going to be a fair amount of discussion of college costs. You know, Obama is out there with his new plan to control the cost of tuition. I don't know how big of a factor that will be in this race, but that health insurance reform, that Wall Street reform, those should be big issues and very much do touch on middle class lives.
Healthcare reform, college costs, Wall Street reform, all important issues. They're all out there. Folks, give us a call and let us know how you're hearing this in the political debate out there. Steve Cazella, I want to ask you, how did in the poll, in the WBUR poll, the support for these candidates break down in terms of age? Of the folks that you polled.
Right. But what we saw is that younger people and older people were both much more likely to support Elizabeth Warren, while those in the middle age groups that we polled were more likely to support Scott Brown. We'll have to see sort of as we go forward and we do a few more of these how those numbers move up and down. You know, this was the first one that we'd done where Elizabeth Warren was more widely known. So, you know, what people will think as they get to know her better may change that breakdown by age as we go forward.
Sure. Well, let's go back to the calls. Jeff is calling from Newton. Hi, Jeff.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to say that I find it absurd that Scott Brown's association with middle-class values seems to be associated with his driving a pickup truck and during campaigns wearing Carhartt work jacket. As someone who put themselves through college by actually wearing Carhartt work clothes and working as a plumber, I resent the fact that, and when they were made in this country, I would add, that alone seems to give him credibility as an advocate for the middle class.
Well, Jeff, let me push back just a little bit, and obviously it's not my business to advocate for Scott Brown or Elizabeth Warren, but in fact, Scott Brown does have a middle class background in many ways. He was the son of a single working mother. He had to work like you to get himself through college and so on and so forth. So while his political handlers, and I'm sure he goes along with it, are happy to sort of push the pickup truck side of his image, I think there is like a middle class guy there behind Scott Brown.
That's not who he represents in the United States Senate.
Okay, well, that's a different discussion.
Any issue where he can, he clearly he clearly has the interests of Wall Street and big money interests, and it's with great difficulty that he recognizes those positions that he has to take in support of Massachusetts middle-class citizens, and he does so grudgingly, in my opinion.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate the call and appreciate your point of view. Steve Cazella, is there any sense from the polling about, when we talk about voters generally giving the edge to Scott Brown as someone who is somehow more rooted in the middle class, is there anything is there anything that explains why that is in the polling?
Well, we didn't ask specific questions about it, but I'd say to get to the caller's point, there's no doubt that these sort of iconic images play into, to a certain extent, why people associate Scott Brown more with being a member of the middle class.
Right.
The thing to note as a sort of part B to that, though, is that that his association in people's minds with being a member of the middle class or having grown up in the middle class doesn't necessarily translate into people giving him the edge as far as being willing to represent the middle class.
Yeah.
You know, again, when you look at those issues about who either does right now or would if she were elected represent the middle class in the Senate. It's pretty much neck and neck on that question.
I see. A couple more calls. You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're asking to what extent are the concerns of the middle class being reflected in the current political debate. And in particular, we're taking a close look at this race between Senator Scott Brown and his likely Democratic opponent, Harvard Law School professor Elizabeth Warren. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Ashby. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. So
the only thing you really have to know in this race, the class thing is way overrated. It's not what class you're from. It's what you actually do in politics that counts. So the Republicans over the last how many years have been pushing deregulation, 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 until they pushed us off a cliff. And the current Republican solution to the problem is more deregulation, which is sort of an insane approach. You know, you have a problem caused by something you've been doing. You're going to solve the problem by doing more of the same thing. And the only thing you really have to know in this race is that Elizabeth Warren is looking to put some reasonable regulations back on institutions which have completely failed to self-regulate. And Scott Brown is opposed to that. And certainly, even if he says he's not opposed to it, he represents, you know, he works with the Republicans, and they are definitely opposed to that.
All right, Mike. Well, we appreciate the call. And David Callahan, just a moment ago, you were talking about health care, college costs, and Wall Street reform as being important issues to the middle class. And there's Mike talking about the importance of Wall Street reform and supporting Elizabeth Warren because of it.
I would add that taxes is another issue that's going to be part of this debate. And, you know, the Democrats have very much staked out raising taxes on the rich as being a main way that they're going to close the deficit and pay for entitlement programs and to help the middle class. And Elizabeth Warren is clearly somebody who favors higher taxes on the rich.
Let's take another call. Desiree from Westford is calling. Hey, Desiree.
Hi. I hope I don't get cut off. I'm on some back roads, but if I do. So I think as far as middle class concerns, I think a lot of people have middle class concerns, and it's, some of the things are almost easy to talk about, but it seems like even if you elect somebody who has all the best intentions, it's the system that has the problem, because they all are beholden to the big money that's gotten them in their spot in the first place, in their political office in the first place. So I would like to see talk about term limits and publicly funded elections.
Term limits and publicly funded elections. Desiree from Westford, thanks so much for your call. David Callahan, do those issues ever come up, you know, in the research that you do about sort of middle class concerns? How big an issue is that?
Well, certainly there's a lot of polling which has shown in the wake of these Occupy Wall Street protests that a lot of Americans do see the political system as being dominated by big money, and all this active super PAC stuff that we've seen in the Republican primary, you know, with a few billionaires seeming to orchestrate the race with large donations, I think has underscored some of those concerns. Citizens United, that Supreme Court ruling that really opened the floodgates, I think has attracted growing notice. There's a sense that the system is awash with money and special interest power. And one of the, I think, things that will be on voters' minds when they go to the polls in 2012 is who's going to better stand up to that? Who's going to back those campaign finance reforms and all of that?
Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Winchester. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What's on your mind?
First of all, I just want to provide a little balance. It seems like this is a Elizabeth Warren commercial for the last 15 minutes I've been listening to right now.
Well, we've been waiting for you, Mike, so we're glad to have you.
I understand all these issues, but at the same time, you got to be smart about it. I don't want to end up like Europe. I don't want to end up like Greece. I don't want to end up like Italy. You know, we have to be, you know, not everybody can take handouts. We can't spend more than we earn. We can't, even though we like to demonize the rich people, it's like, you know, the rich people are the folks who have the money to spend to start up companies that are innovators. And so if you squeeze the people who have money to invest too much, they're not going to invest.
Right. So, Mike, I take it by what you're saying, for those reasons, you're a Scott Brown supporter.
Oh, yeah.
All right. All right. Well, we're glad you called in, and we appreciate it. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Don, who's calling from Peabody. Hi, Don.
Hi, thank you. I'm curious how the numbers break down on gender. Massachusetts hasn't been very good about electing women to high office.
That's a great question. Let me ask Steve Casella if the polling showed anything on that.
Yeah, right now what we have is it's essentially tied among men, and Warren has, I forget if it's an eight or nine point lead among women. It's a different dynamic than the Brown-Coakley election was, where Brown closed the gender gap, so to speak, to within three among women when he was running against Coakley. So it's a little bit wider now than it was during that election.
I see. I'm interested too. Members members of the right, Scott Brown supporters, have tried to brand Elizabeth Warren as a Harvard elite. I'm wondering to what extent does that hurt her chances, especially with this issue of this effort to identify with the middle class?
Well, I think we'll have to wait and see as she becomes more well-known. Does this gap as far as who grew up in a middle-class background or who more came from the middle class, does that gap widen or does that gap narrow? I mean, the important thing to remember is that even though she's much more well-known than she was in the last WBUR poll we did back in September, there's still about a third of voters out there who either say that they've never heard of her or that they've heard of her but they have no opinion. So there's some distance to go, in other words, as far as her defining herself for voters. And I should also add being defined by what other people say about her.
Mm. David Callahan, one more question to you about the study that you've done on the Massachusetts middle class. We've heard for some time now that the perception is that the upcoming generation, the current generation, faces more economic uncertainty than past generations. This idea that you could bequeath to the next generation a better standard of living. Evidence that view of sort of the American dream has eroded in a big way?
Well, the evidence is in some of the statistics in our report, which show that earnings for college graduates between 25 and 34 have stagnated over the last 20 years. And meanwhile, the costs of college tuition, the college debt has gone way up, the cost of child care. I mean, this is a very strapped young generation that is coming into the world.
That's David Callahan. He's co-founder and senior fellow at Demos, a nonpartisan think tank, which is headquartered in New York City. He joined us from NPR's New York Bureau. He's also the author of a report on the Massachusetts middle class. David Callahan, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Great to be here.
And Steve Casella, president of Mass Inc. Polling Group and the author of a new poll just out today by WBUR. Steve Casella, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, the conversation continues online at radioboston.org. Tomorrow in Morning Edition, we'll have more on the new WBUR poll. We'll find out what Massachusetts voters think about health care and its role in the presidential race. Stay with us up next, When Doctors Do Yoga. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.